Navigating media's shifting landscape, from legacy to digital independence.
Yeah.
Like, it's too fake.
Look, as we both know, in every business, and especially in ours, you do what you have to do to protect yourself. And if it's, you know, if it's me or you, and I put myself in a position where I was vulnerable, then it's going to be me. And that's what happened. And I accept it. I don't blame CNN. This was really about two people making decisions about my life, not the organization. I miss the people. I wish the place well. That is all true. But I have a connection with News Nation and these guys where I am anxious to bleed for them. I am excited about putting it all on the line every day, anywhere in the world. Because of my upbringing and my disposition, when I know you're there for me when you don't need to be, it's not necessarily, you know, there are a lot of big names that you could grab in the media right now. For News Nation to give me the chance and to let me do it and to support me and to support me when Andrew decides that he's got to be in public service, can't put a price on it, could never be grateful enough. So from a year ago until today, I now know that. And there is something comforting about that. It's an ugly business. It's an ugly time.
The ugliest business.
All the wrong things are being rewarded, but I'm in the right place for me.
It's funny, I don't want to spend 2 hours beating up on the media because everyone hates them already, but it's been almost 2 years for me since I haven't worked in the media. And it's weird how you, when you do work there for your whole life, you just accept that, like, yeah, everyone lies all the time and it's totally treacherous and people who claim to be your friends actually hate you and every dispute is settled with a lawyer. It's like just, oh, it's so disgusting. But you just accept that's like the way things work. But that's not how things work outside the media.
Nowhere else in your life. You know, it's part of politics and media, right? There's certainly related, if not married. And I think that the biggest frustration, you and I both know there are lots of great men and women who do the job for the right reasons. But as a culture, it's okay in the media for me to destroy you by a standard that I would never want imposed on me. And there is something that is really dangerous about that.
I agree.
I don't want you to know about my life, but you, we're going after.
100%.
And that dichotomy, let's call it, that paradox is really...
Well, it's hypocrisy.
Yes, and it's really dangerous. And look, unfortunately, it works so well. You know, if I were to cover you in any situation and put a positive spin on it, that's a puff piece. It's weak. Cuomo's been red-pilled. He got bought up by that preppy, smiley chucklehead. And if I then say, well, I sat with Tucker, and as I knew it, Devil's Spawn. Ooh, that was a hard-hitting piece. You know, he really came at
him. They're such children.
The commodity is negativity. If you want to be a hard journalist, you better say something negative about somebody. It's a proxy for insight.
I just interviewed Sam Bankman-Fried yesterday from jail. It hasn't aired yet. And I actually really enjoyed the conversation. And about 5 minutes in, I was like, oh, shit, I haven't asked him a single mean question about his business. Well, he's in jail for 25 years, so... I thought, I don't really need to make the case that he did something wrong. A jury's already, already decided that. And I think it's okay to just like have a conversation with the guy. And then I thought, well, I'll probably be criticized for sucking up to Sam Bankman-Fried. And I thought, I don't care, actually.
Well, look, you're in a unique position, right? Because one, you have no boss. Two, the media is already not looking to be a friend to you.
You don't think so?
So you don't have to impress anybody. And you can,
I'm not going
to
win them over. Margaret Brennan's not going to text me congratulations.
You can do whatever you want to do. And there's a lot of freedom in that. And of course, there are challenges of you having to support yourself and find opportunities and build your own infrastructure. You know, there's a lot of entrepreneurial stuff that you and I never had to deal with before.
That's for sure.
So you can just have a conversation with him because the media doesn't know what to do with digital and independent media. The instinct was to disrespect it.
Oh, of course.
Right? Marginalize it. And I think on a reporting level, that's still safe ground. I mean, what's popping on digital media isn't investigative reporting per se. There are some, Taibbi, Schellenberger, stuff like that, but Barry Weiss at the Free Press. But it's mostly hot takes. But now that we're realizing in our society, and I'm very excited about it, power is shifting back to people and from institutions. And that's really uncomfortable for some people.
Yes.
I think the Democrats are in a weird place where they seem like, which is such anathema as Mario Cuomo's kid. He was so anti-establishment, but they seem pro-establishment, defenders of the status quo. And I think that's a really dangerous place to be right now, because I think power is shifting towards being disruptive of institutions and of the elites in a very real way. And digital media is much better positioned to be empowered by that than what they're now calling legacy media. I don't buy into that as a pejorative, but I see it. And I see that people are really open to getting two things are happening at the same time. Siloed, absolutely. But also, people are realizing that they can reach out and get different versions of events and takes on things in a way that they couldn't before. And I think that's really exciting, and the media doesn't know what to do with it.
So, it's amazing. And, you know, I think the most influential people in media, I think you'd have to put Rogan at the top of that, you know, kind of don't work for anybody. And,
nope.
And it's just so interesting. If you look at the ads on Margaret Brennan's show, it's like, you know, Nissan, and Joe Rogan, it's like prostate health cures. It's like that. It's the whole guys like Rogan have become rich, famous, influential, completely outside.
Yes.
The conventional
structures. Certainly Rogan. Certainly Rogan.
But all of them. I mean, all of them. Megyn Kelly is enormously influential. I haven't seen her ads, but like.
But she's still corporate backed, right? She's Sirius XM. She was Fox, as you well know. Didn't work for her at NBC, which really wasn't a surprise to anybody in there. You know, it's being a network anchor, being a storyteller, being a host that is accommodative of broad audiences that are looking to be inoffensive.
Yes.
That's a very different skill set that she clearly was going to struggle with. So I wasn't surprised by that. But she's Sirius XM. Now Rogan is Spotify, but he built that all himself.
But you're wondering, though, but still, I mean, Rogan is, you know, in some sense, like bigger than Spotify. He could leave Spotify. I think Megan could leave.
I was surprised he took the deal.
Right.
I was surprised he took the deal.
Well, it gives him a lot of freedom. But here's my question. You see every kind of mid-sized independent business in America getting scooped up by private equity. So every veterinary practice, every dental office, HVAC places, cemetery associations, like there is this inexorable trend toward like conglomerates.
Yes.
Small independents getting scooped up by some big umbrella group. That's going to happen in media, I would think.
We are presently realizing, so there was that big wave of deals that you and I missed in the podcast space where people were just throwing money to have a footprint in it, right? Rogan was the biggest of those deals, right? But then it went away. And when I got into it, I'm all self-financed because, well, I was damaged goods, but people weren't looking to just throw money at a podcast because no one was making money on those deals. It was like relearning the Howard Stern lesson that they paid him all that money at Sirius XM. And it's like, you know, what was the yield? Now, different people are starting to buy up podcasts that are traditional media companies. And they are the seed capital behind the private equity behind those organizations are starting to buy up these properties again.
The complexity of identity and politics in modern America.
He went after his family. They tried to
overcome.
Put his sons in jail.
He did overcome.
Put him in jail. Right. They shot him.
But he is a unicorn also. He is the true Teflon Don.
But it's an inspiration. Like, what, you know, whatever you think of Trump or what he does, he's basically saying the same things he was saying 25 years ago. You can pull the tape on Larry King Live about tariffs, about immigration, about foreign policy. He's basically, I mean, he's changed, of course, on a lot of little things, but on the big things, exactly the same. And he just kept going. And it worked. So,
well, I think that
maybe Trump is a lesson that there are limits to what the personal attack.
That's what I was going to say. Is that I think that he's more of a symptom than he is a cause. The election message was, you guys are focusing on things that don't matter to us the way you want them to.
Right.
And what does matter to us doesn't matter enough to you. And what they saw in Trump were two main things. One, the personification of this. that you are trying to destroy this guy on a basis that we are not really okay with. And the second thing is that he wants to disrupt all the things that we believe need disruption. And his views between the cancel culture and different cultural wars, as we call them, Donald Trump, for whatever you want to say about him negatively, approximated normal to the American voters more than the Democrats did. And that's
the
message.
Just scared the crap out of everybody.
But I mean, that's an example of what I'm saying.
I think there are many examples, but that one was like so florid and crazy that, and it's still going on, that I to this day, I don't understand it. And we live in a world where there are always going to be people who want to wear women's clothes or whatever. Fine.
Oh, I understand it. You saw it.
To elevate trannyism to like the top of the agenda list?
I can explain it to you very easily. It's readily apparent. And look, we saw the same mistake on display when the president addressed Congress. Okay? That is not a time for you to be obnoxious. If he wants to be obnoxious, fine. You are there out of respect for the office. There are rules of decorum in that place. I believe there should be rules of decorum in all places, in media and politics, but there aren't, but there are there. And they willfully and wantonly abuse them to make a point that they are against Trump. And it was a bad look for the Democrats. What is it an extension of? We, as Democrats, they will tell you, we are resisting who he wants to abuse and what he wants to destroy. Like what? Trans are a unique minority in this country. They are uniquely targeted. They need protection. We are going to protect them. Okay, but this particular aspect of the issue, guys my size who decide to become female and play against my daughter in high school, that is not what you need to protect them from or against. That's something that doesn't make sense. Nope. We have to hold to the purity of the cause of protecting this minority group. Yeah, but you're not protecting them. You're protecting the people that are playing against them because they're 230 pounds. Yeah, it almost never happens. But if it happens once, it's something that never needed to happen. The purity test, the absolutist nature of binary politics, that if you are for something, you have to be all in on it beyond any conception of reason. That's what we're dealing with in our politics.
But that's
what that issue is.
Well, of course, and I can think of a million topics on which that is true.
I see that with guns on the right, by the way.
Maybe right. I'm an absolutist on that. I could tell you why. It's not even that interesting. But what I think, the right to self-defense is a part of natural law. The idea that a man can become a woman by wishing it so is not only a violation of natural law, it's a violation of nature itself. It's like inherently insane. It's a denial of physical reality. And so if the argument is, there are people with weird sexual impulses who we shouldn't like scapegoat and hurt. I mean, I'm totally in agreement with that.
It is a perversion of live and let live. So, right.
but to force the rest of us to tell a lie.
That's the perversion.
That's when you feel like, well, this is a spiritual attack.
Well,
actually,
it doesn't have to be a lie. In the interest of live and let live, right, which is a signature American freedom, or should be, right? You don't want these people to live the way they want to live. You are infringing on their rights. We will protect them. Now, I understand the political philosophy behind that. But once it entered a realm of where the people that you say you're trying to protect are now a problem for another group that need protection also, which are these kids, they didn't click into the common sense.
Oh, it's more than that, though. It's like the idea that the government should be involved in people's sex lives is a shocking concept to me. I don't think it should be.
Me either.
And they're promoting homosexuality. Promoting it. And I'll tell you how we know that they're promoting it, because its incidence has risen dramatically. Now, when I was a young man, there was a debate over what percentage of the population is gay. I was never anti-gay, for the record, and I'm not now. But it's an interesting question. They would say, you're born that way. You're born gay. So you cannot criticize someone on the basis of his immutable characteristics. Great. I totally agree with that. But then we saw the absolute incidence of self-reported homosexuality like triple. So clearly people aren't born that way. 30% of eighth graders were born gay? No, that's not true. And so there's been this dramatic rise that none of us are allowed to notice. It's like, you can't notice that. Well, why? Okay. Yes, I can. And I'm sort of thunderstruck by it. Like, what is that? And it clearly is a manifestation of the deeper truth, which is maybe people, some people are born gay, but people can also be moved toward self-identifying as gay. And that's exactly what's happened. So why? Anyway, so like, I don't think that's good. I don't think that's good. And I also don't understand why the government should be taking my tax dollars to convince people that certain forms of sex are better than others, particularly non-procreative sex. Like, what the hell is that?
Well, look, it's an easy legal and moral backstop that government should not be in the business of type. Okay? That's easy. There's plenty of things that government should be doing that isn't necessary. I believe that is an extension to how people choose their own bodies and how they use them. I believe in reproductive rights. I think it is a right. However, I see gay acceptance a little differently. The difference of a generation from our kids to us is it's much safer to say that you're gay now than it was. You used to get beat up. You used to get ostracized. You used to get excluded. That happens less now. It still happens, but it happens less. Is there also a cultural formation that we see, like in America? Everything goes in these big swings in different directions, always reaction formation. Are we more gay friendly in our culture, aggressively so, assertively so, than we were when we were growing up? Yes. Can that make it more attractive to young people who are struggling and trying to figure themselves out? Maybe. And that's why I remember when I was in college, there were a lot of people who were gay in college who weren't gay afterwards. Now, a lot of them were gay in college and gay afterwards, but I think there's something to experimenting and certain people
identity.
Ask,
though, it's like, okay, but I just want to get to like the core question, which is, where does this come from, being gay? Is it inborn? We were told you're born that way. Okay, so where's the gene? There isn't one.
So, I don't know the genetics, but I believe...
no one has isolated a
but
gene.
You haven't noticed when you were raising your kids that there would be certain kids that you were like, I think this kid's going to be gay.
100%. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Like as where they were too young to be mimicking it.
I absolutely did notice that.
Zelensky's authority and the complexities of war in Ukraine.
By what authority does Zelensky negotiate on behalf of his country, rule his country? He just put his main political opponent under indictment and froze his personal funds under internal sanctions, the security services of Ukraine.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
We just
went through the same thing in this country.
Sounds like dictatorship,
what I'm saying
by
is,
the way.
No, but he's not a dictator. And
then by what authority does he rule Ukraine?
So here's how. He was elected, and now under their constitution, he does have the ability to stall elections and operate under martial law during the conflict.
So you're comfortable with people saying, I'm going to blow. No, he could certainly have an election if he wanted.
But he
doesn't want an election. You're from a political family.
It's the same thing with Israel right now. They're not having elections either because they're in the midst of an active conflict. It's not a time for transition of power.
Okay, but I don't know why we make excuses for dictatorship.
It's not a dictatorship.
Of course it is. Any unelected leader who has the power.
He was elected. He was elected.
Actually, he has a presidential term.
Right.
If Joe Biden just said, you know what, we're in a conflict right now, I can't have elections, I'm canceling the election, or if Donald Trump.
But there's a constitutional provision for this.
He could have an election whenever he wanted. He could have an election right now. No one doubts that, actually. And his opponent was calling for that before he was just shut down by the Ukrainian intel services a week ago. So there's no authority. He doesn't have democratic authority over his country. What he has is a lot of NATO weapons. And to your second point, he has absolutely, as a matter of fact, the Ukrainian military has sold those weapons on the black market around the world. And they have these are facts. They've wound up in the hands of, among others, the Mexican drug cartels, the Taliban, Hamas in Gaza. Fact. And a lot of other groups. And it's incredibly destabilizing, by the way. The United States did this years ago in Afghanistan, as you know, and sent a bunch of Stinger missiles to the Mujahideen in 1979 and 80 to fight the Soviets. And those missiles caused huge problems for all of Southwest Asia for like 20 years. And so this is a big deal. And I don't know why people feel like they have to lie about it now.
I don't know that it's about lying about it. I don't agree that those are facts.
You don't believe that that the Ukrainian military, you know what?
I'll tell you why.
I'll bet you my car that in the
next
year.
What kind of car is it?
With some crappy.
Oh, then I'm not going to bet that.
Okay. No, I don't have nice cars. So I'll admit that. I've never bought a new car. I do, so we're not doing a swap.
Okay.
But anyway, the point is, no one believes me. I know someone who bought some of the weapons. I'm just, you know, whatever. I can't.
Well, first of all, you would have to substantiate, you know, who it is that you knew because.
Do you believe the most corrupt country in Europe, which is so corrupt that NATO didn't want it as a member? You believe it's outside the realm of possibility that facing defeat, the leaders of that military would not sell the weapons that they're getting from the West?
You cannot substantiate a claim on the basis of mere suspicion. It's not mere suspicion. Hold on.
I know someone who bought some of the weapons.
I believe that you think that. What I'm saying is.
I know it.
I'm saying that, well, you know that they say it. You don't know whether they did. And I'll tell you why I'm suspicious. Because the missiles that Russia put out those pictures of were from like 2014, and they didn't even have javelins then. So the idea that Ukraine could have been selling weapons that were taken from a different time as an obvious ploy by Russia to make them look bad is, to me, propaganda not proof that they did it.
Okay.
Are you texting while I'm having a conversation with you?
I'm texting right now.
Very rude.
No, no.
Very
rude. I'm texting on WhatsApp right now on this exact subject.
Tucker, I'm not saying you're lying. I'm saying I'm disagreeing that it's a fact that the military there is spending weapons that they very much need to Mexican cartels. Why does Mexico's cartels need to get weapons from Ukraine when they get them across our border with straw buyers all the time? I mean, to me, it doesn't even make sense from a practicality standpoint, but it seems like
you can get surface air missiles from straw buyers.
No, not surface air missiles. Small arms.
Small arms you can buy anywhere. No, I'm talking about weapons systems.
But this is not documented stuff, and it seems to want to smear Ukraine to make them the bad guy and make Russia the good guy.
Ukraine. This is one of those topics that I'm just gonna.
I'm not mad at you.
No.
It's a conversation.
I'm mad because I know this is true.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying I don't know
it. It's a fact. And unfortunately, I can't. And maybe I shouldn't have brought it up because I can't name the person who told me
this. I don't want you to expose a source.
I'm not going to.
What I'm saying is, look, people.
Let me
bottom line it by
saying.
People do bad things with money that we give them.
I have a huge amount of knowledge on this one topic. I'm wholly ignorant of many topics. I know a lot about this topic.
And you think Zelensky is a bad guy who's a dictator?
What I'm telling you is the Ukrainian military has sold huge amounts of American-supplied, NATO-supplied weapon systems around the world, and that they're purchasable now by governments and armed groups and are being purchased.
And why hasn't it been documented?
I'm just telling you that if this will be documented, and I got that directly, once again, from someone who purchased quite a few of those weapons, who I know personally, and in another country, and knows a lot about this. It runs a military, and it's just frustrating because I can't say
but I'm
beyond
not,
that.
Look, my point is not to frustrate you, Tucker. It's to understand this mentality of framing Ukraine and Zelensky as the bad guy.
It's noting the facts. The guy's not elected.
He is elected. His term has been expended constitutionally.
Would you be comfortable if we were, well, we are in a war with Russia right now. If Donald Trump, no, it is a war with Russia. Americans have died. It's a war that we're funding.
We're not on the ground there.
What do you mean? There are many Americans in Ukraine fighting.
U.S. military
there are
is
US
not in the ground.
Yes, there are.
Look, I know that there are.
What are you talking about?
They're not actively fighting Russian forces.
What do you mean they're guiding weapons into Russia?
Yes.
What do you mean they're not actively fighting? Yes. They're absolutely actively fighting.
Well, have we declared war?
Of course not. We didn't declare war in Vietnam or Korea. That doesn't mean anything.
True. Did
we
in Iraq.
Declare, I guess we did. That went well.
There was a congressional vote.
Of course. But the point is, if Trump were to say, we're at war with Russia, I can't have an election, I would say, that's not legitimate. You do not have the authority to extend, and I don't care, you know, what pretext you make up for it. You can't put your opponents in jail. You can't. But more than anything, what I'm saying is that this is scary. It's not even blaming Zelensky. There are many power centers within Ukraine. There's the military, the intel services, there's the president's office. There are competing political
People say the same things about us, by the way.
Of course, it's true. It's true. Especially true here. It's a huge country. I'm not even blaming Zelensky directly. I'm saying this is the largest country in Europe. We have poured billions of dollars in pretty high-tech weapons systems into this country, and we're not keeping track of them. We also have biolabs throughout the country. We have biolabs.
And we're about to have more of a footprint because the mineral deal will put American companies on the ground in those areas that are right now war zones.
All I'm saying is we've funded the worst war Europe has seen since World War II for 3 years. That entails an awful lot of weapons, including bioweapons. I'm not guessing. This is a fact. Tory Nuland said it in a conversation with the now Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, in the Senate on camera. So there are biolabs in Ukraine with biological weapons in them. Who the hell is keeping track of this stuff? That's all I'm saying. It's not an attack on Zelensky. We have a moral obligation to keep track of this stuff. There's never been an audit.
I have no problem with that.
It's fucking crazy.
I have no problem with keeping track of it.
Talk about destabilization of the world. Like, why are we doing this?
So do you believe that we should just back out of what we're doing there now and let Russia take it?
Russia take it? I don't know. At this point, Russia has, we're not in charge. Russia just won. They beat us in their war. In case you haven't noticed, Russia outproduced in munitions NATO, including the United States.
The complexities of war, wealth, and national identity.
That's a fact, and I'd bet my house on it, okay? I know that to be true, but I can't tell you how I know that. So I'm going to have to just wait to be vindicated, I guess.
But it's not a debate. I'm just saying that it seems that has shifted, and now Ukraine is the bad guy.
Okay, we haven't heard anything about Ukraine for the past 3 years. You were required, and I got fired over this, so I know. You were required to pretend that Zelensky, who I think is a complicated person for whom I feel sorry, actually. I feel like he's a pawn among bigger powers, okay? I feel bad for Zelensky. But we were required to pretend that he was Jesus and that Vladimir Putin was Satan. And my only point is that's not true, actually. It's way more complicated than that. Both of them have good and bad qualities. And moreover, it's not our fight. Like, what are we doing there? This whole thing is so nuts just because you're mad at Russia for some reason that you'll never say out loud. We have to take our country to war there? And by the way, can I just say something?
Sure.
Why? I mean, this war has, like most wars that we fight, been promoted by some of the richest people in our country. And I'll name one. Ken Griffin, who is a hedge fund billionaire, has really pushed hard, and I've seen it, behind the scenes to force Republican politicians to support bigger payments to the Zelensky government. And it's like, Ken Griffin's a multi-billionaire. He's probably, I don't know, millions of dollars on lobbying on this issue, but he hasn't spent billions on Ukraine. He could send billions of his own money to Ukraine. A lot of the Ukraine war supporters could do it. They could also go fight the war. They're conscripting 50-year-old men, guys with Down syndrome. The videos are all over the internet, and they're real. I hear from people in Ukraine on the subject.
Those videos I've seen.
Yeah. So I haven't noticed any. Bill Kristol's not fighting in Ukraine. Why is that? Why is Ken Griffin not sending billions to Ukraine? No, what they're doing is pressuring the U.S. media, pressuring the U.S. Congress to do something that they themselves are not willing to do. Up to and including sending American troops, which we have in Ukraine, risking their lives. Why isn't Ken Griffin doing that? I just want to say, I think it's one of the most immoral things I've ever seen.
I think that you're heading in the right direction now, because I believe that
you support the war, go pay for it, go fight it.
That complaint that the wealthy and powerful are feeding off the rest of us, I think is the one untapped reservoir of populist sentiment in this country. We have a system right now.
I don't think we're allowed to say that.
Well, we have a system where the corporations, right, get to do whatever they want with the money that they make. And they get to work the system to pay as little as possible into the rest of us. They still pay more. And so obviously, the taxes are paid more by the wealthy than by those who aren't wealthy, but we find ways around it. And the government then subsidizes those same corporations, even though they don't take care of their own workers. And I think that how the powerful are able to leverage our government is the main fight that we need to have. So you'll have, like, let's say Walmart is a great and egregious example. They have more of their people on SNAP as a percentage, their workers, than any other corporation. Yet, they're making a lot of money. And then what do we say? Well, they're allowed to give it to their shareholders. That's capitalism. Oh, but we, Tucker Carlson and Chris Cuomo,
have to subsidize your
workers. I think that that's the main fight. Now, obviously, it's not Ukraine. But what I'm saying is rich people imposing their will on the U.S. government to do what they want for them is a real thing.
I couldn't agree more. However, I think, and I agree with what you said about Walmart completely. Why should I subsidize?
And not just workforce? Walmart, it's all of them.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Well, it's capitalism.
But I don't think that that's the greatest threat to our democracy or our freedoms or our country. I think because look, Walmart, huge, world's biggest retailer, or was a powerful company, obviously. It's got a board of directors. It's got shareholders. It's a publicly traded company. You mm-hmm. can buy Walmart. There's some accountability inherent in that structure. If you have someone like Ken Griffin, not to beat up on poor Ken Griffin, who, you know, I don't think Ken Griffin's evil. It's just silly. But I'll just name him again. Ken Griffin is like this independent multi-billionaire who's got massive, and there are a lot of these guys, with massive political influence because of the money that he has. And there's no accountability at all. What are you gonna do to Ken? There's no board of directors of Ken Griffin. He just is a billionaire. He is his own power center. And he's what we would call, if he were Russian, an oligarch. We put sanctions on him.
Yeah, that's the new word in the American vernacular, and I'm okay with it. I think it applies.
No, but that's the real threat, because like a guy like
I agree.
Can own his own media outlets.
I agree.
Can own his own politicians. He can, I mean,
I don't know why you're not talking about Musk in the same way. All the tech bros, which I think is a really benign and casual label for these guys, he's doing everything that we're supposed to be worried about happening in this society right now. And again, I'm not anti-Elon Musk. I'm not. I think he's a genius. I think that there are things that are happening right now.
I can answer your question, and I don't think it's an unfair question at all, because I do think the world that produced Elon is a world you need to think about a little
right.
bit. I think there are definitely some threats. Elon specifically will always have my love because he did the most important thing, which is restore free speech to the United States through X. And he took, because, you know, free speech doesn't mean anything if you can't actually speak to an audience. Like I can, you know, lecture the mirror in my living room, but it doesn't mean anything. I have to be able to talk to other people in order to convince them. And there was no place to do that at scale. All the social media apps were controlled, completely controlled. And he has given a real measure of free speech back to the United States, to its citizens, which is really the difference between slavery and freedom, is being able to say what you think. I mean, there's kind of like a free man can say what he believes is true and a slave can't. It's that simple. So if you want to remain free and not enslaved, then you have to have free speech. And no one else seemed to agree with that except this like South African guy. The South African
ironic
like, rock. It is. It maybe it's ironic. I don't know. I mean, I'm highly opposed to immigration, but I have to say, including my best friend, a lot of the best people I know are immigrants, and they appreciate America for what actually makes it great, which is its core freedoms. And
what do you mean you're against immigration?
We have too much immigration, and we've made the country totally unstable.
No, there's a difference between too much and none.
Well, I'm not against immigration.
You just said
in
that.
In theory,
okay.
We need to shut down all immigration right now until we can retain or regain equilibrium and like figure out what it is that holds us all together as a nation. It's too chaotic. It's too crazy right now. No more people, period, none. Cap it right now and then just cooling off period. 30 or 40 years.
Cooling off from what? This is all stuff that Trump has stoked as the biggest problem we have.
It is the biggest problem we have. And I'll tell you exactly why. Because it creates chaos and disunity. If you have a continental-sized country like we do, the main question you have always, every day, you're thinking about all day long, how do we hold together? How do 50 states not become 50 countries? I mean, that will naturally happen, right? Because each governor sees himself as Caesar. So how do you keep them cohesive? And the only way to do that is short of force. You could just like get nukes and tell everyone to obey. But short of that, short of becoming a totalitarian country, it's by consent. It's because everybody thinks we're in this together. We're all Americans. We have this in common. And it used to be race and religion. It no longer is. Okay. So what is it? Crickets. What is it? What is it that we all have in common? And no one is even trying to answer that question. And until you can answer that question, you are going to move toward disunity. The drug cartels will take over, you know, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and they'll be their own thing. And, you know, New England will be its own thing. And, you know, God knows what will happen, but it'll break apart. Because that's just the nature of people, of human society. So we need a period where we can think through what it is to be an American, what unites us, what's our civic religion. It can't just be everyone's gay. That's not enough. Pride flag is not enough to hold a country together. what is it? And immigration makes it impossible because it's too much churn. Things change too fast. Okay, who are these people?
We've populated the country.
Not at this scale.
Race, meritocracy, and the illusion of equality.
And they took it away. And no one said anything about it. And anyone who did was called a racist.
No, I get the cancel culture concerns. And
it's not cancel culture. It's like fundamental, dude.
I'm saying being called racist for saying what you just said is a function of cancel culture.
Yeah,
and it's unfair.
Who cares about that?
But what I'm saying is this. You didn't have minorities being given the opportunities because they were minorities. That was something that America wanted to correct because it is the opposite of equality.
Okay.
And it was the same with women. And that's what you should be trying to do.
No.
Not to the exclusion of anyone else, not to the exclusion of merit, but you don't want people held back because
it's
of who
really
or what they
simple.
Are.
Either people, as you said, I'm just quoting you, my oracle.
Thank you.
That what it is to be an American is to participate in a system that judges you on the basis of what you do.
Yes.
Not on who you are, where you came from, what your parents did, or what they look like.
Land of opportunity.
Land of opportunity. And I pressed, what does that mean? And you said what I just said. And so every institution in American life to this day, the meaningful ones, the universities, the large corporations, the federal government, to this day has abandoned that and moved aggressively in the other direction. There are federal set-asides, the ladders of success, the merit badges that we require to enter these institutions, mostly in education, totally determined by race and sex. And that's the opposite of what you said. So then, and that's been going on for 60 years. So, okay. So clearly it's not the land of opportunity. What is it?
No, I believe
it's a giant pinata party where the most aggressive person gets the biggest pile. So Larry Fink is the richest guy because he elbowed people in the face the hardest. I mean, that's kind of what it is. Actually.
There is a little bit of who and how the system gets worked, but I would disagree that it has been destroyed. I would disagree that because you still have whites in dominant positions everywhere that you can measure.
It's not about whites. It's about people. It's about human beings. Are you going to judge the person on the content of his character, the color of his skin?
But you weren't judging them on the content
genitalia.
Of their character. And when you see...
No, it's hard to know
if
that.
If you look at corporate studies of
corporate
what
studies.
Diversity does to them, it increases productivity, increases
You're talking about
reach.
The McKinsey study from 2018, which has been... It's a joke. It's been utterly debunked. And they were selling their... diversity consultants.
I'm not referring to that study, but I remember
there's no
what
study
you're talking
that
about.
Shows hiring people on the basis of skin color makes a
not
company more effective.
Not on the basis of skin color. It's that you remove the restriction.
There are no restrictions.
That you won't hire them as often because of their skin color.
Why not just color? Then, okay, I have a simple solution for this. It's called standardized testing. And it was created in order to solve the problem that you describe, which is bias. And so standardized testing was a good faith effort by the WASPs, by the way, who ran the big American universities, to be fair. They're trying to be fair. It's like, okay, let's just pick people on the basis of their intelligence, their aptitude. It's an aptitude test.
Right.
And that kind of worked, actually. It elevated not just WASPs, but, you know, Jews and Catholics and Black people and everybody was judged on the basis. And it was imperfect, of course, but basically it worked. And it's why America dominated the world, because it had the smartest people in positions of power. And then at the apogee, at the top, we abandon it. And we're like, oh, this isn't working. What do you mean it's not working? It's totally working. It's working because then we get the cream of all the other countries. The smartest people from around the world move here, including some of my friends. The best. And then we abandon it. And we're like, well, that's unfair. How is it unfair? It's the definition of fairness. You're judging someone without even knowing what he looks like or his sex on the basis of his performance. How is that unfair? They never explained. They just took it away. Now it's gone. And now in federal contracting, if you're a woman-owned business, why do I have an interest in a woman-owned business? I don't care who owns the business.
Well, again,
I just want a good business.
You're ignoring the impact of the Trump administration, which has been...
Well, it's been 6 weeks.
I know, but I'm saying you strip it out, you'll see what happens. I don't think diversity is our problem. And standardized testing, I don't have a problem with it.
I never said diversity was a problem.
I'm not saying you did. I'm stating it as a proposition. What I'm saying is that the testing... assumes equal starting points. If you and I are both going to take a standardized test right now in an area that I am prepared for and you're not, then we're not going to do the same.
Well, go ahead and prepare for it then. I mean, I don't know what to say. What's a better way to do it?
The point, well, I'm not saying there's a better way. I'm saying that I don't have a problem with standardized testing. I don't have a problem with SATs and people having to use them to get into educational institutions. I don't have any problem with it. I'm saying that you also have to be open to the reality that the kids aren't going to do the same on the test when one has had a good education and one has not had a good education.
You know, there's a lot of science behind that. And the truth is darker and harder to deal with. Okay, which is that intelligence is the product of environment to some extent, but it's mostly genetic. And intelligence is, you know, a lot of factors in success, but intelligence is the single most important over time in big populations. Smarter populations do better. They make more money. They go to jail less often. They stay married. Singapore is a more successful society than the United States for this reason. Okay, so that's the truth. If you have a meritocratic society, the smartest people will have most of the money and most of the success. And that doesn't seem fair to people is the truth, actually. And as we got better at sorting the smart people and sending them to Harvard and McKinsey and, you know, on to private equity, it became more obvious. No, it's true, though. It became obvious that the meritocracy was producing an incredibly lopsided society, and that freaked people out, and it felt unfair to them. And two people in the early 1990s wrote a book on it, Dick Herrnstein and Murray, and it was called The Bell Curve. Mm-hmm. And it had a chapter on race in it, which was, you know, made a lot of people mad. They could have taken that chapter out, and it would have been, I think, the transformative book ever, because it described what I just said, which is the meritocracy produces an outcome that you may not be ready for, actually, because it's rooted in nature and you can't change it. And Head Start, which was designed to increase the IQ of poor kids, didn't work. And no one even wants to talk about it anymore. It's really hard to change people's intelligence. And intelligence turns out to be the main predictor of economic success. So these are super complicated questions. But I know that a system that rewards people on the basis of race and punishes others on the basis of race creates hatred and division.
I don't think the point is, I don't think you have to do it that way, is what I'm saying. And I understand.
If I can't get into college, if two people apply to college and they're different colors and the one with a lower SAT score is admitted because of his race, that's penalizing the one.
I understand,
who is
which
not
is why
admitted.
It's no longer the law of the country.
It's true in every college in the United States, as you know, especially the selective ones, including the one you went to.
But they changed the law.
They lie. And the Harvard case showed that. You can say they did this with the UC system in California, which was once a great system when I grew up in that state, and it's now a joke because of this. But they basically found out that they were just like, we have too many Asians, can't have too many Asians.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
What was interesting to me about the case is that it wasn't white people. It was Asian people who were saying that they were being discriminated
right.
against.
So basically the way they shut down the conversation is by making everyone feel guilty about slavery, which no living person had anything to do with at all, and no living person I've ever met supports. I couldn't be more opposed to it. That's why I'm for free speech, because I'm against slavery.
But look, it's not a coincidence that people of color, specifically African-American, are at a different socioeconomic level given how they were introduced to the country, right? Because race is completely fabricated. There is no such thing as race.
Well,
we made it up.
I don't even know what you're talking about. What do you mean?
You cut open a black guy and a white guy, their genetics are the same.
That's okay.
We made race.
I don't know what you're...
We made it. We made it a thing. Just because you look different doesn't mean you're different species. So created it.
Hold on. No one's saying anyone's a different species.
I'm not saying that you are. I'm saying that...
I think we may be getting into science still too deep.
I'm saying the science is very simple. Right?
So
we created
saying,
race. And
hold on. Wait, I don't know what you're talking about. So you're saying that there are no differences between the races? So for example, the genetic predisposition to certain diseases is fake?
There are cultural, there are ethnic.
How is that cultural?
Navigating free speech and civil discourse in a divided society.
That's like a super easy test. If you are not allowed to criticize the people who have more power than you do, you're not living in a free country.
I still think it's weird that you look at Ukraine and not Russia for the immediate example.
Well, I'm not funding Russia. Okay. And my tax dollars are funding Ukraine. So that's kind of why I have a special interest. Any country that we fund, we have a right to look carefully at where our money's going.
No issue with that.
Any country. Okay. So I would say that. And the second point is, of course, I think the public discourse is completely out of control. I think pornography is disgusting. And I think the cruelty that I see all the time is shocking to me and really sad. And I hate it. And there's clearly like some deep rage going on inside people. I think I understand where it comes from, but I'm totally opposed to it.
Well, what do you do about it?
Well, all I can say for myself is I try not to add to it. I certainly have added to it, you know, sometimes, and I'm sorry about that. I really try not to now. Probably should have started a little earlier, but I still do. But anyway, I don't know what you do about it.
I don't know what to do.
Just try and, you know, model reasonable, decent. Last thing I'll say, I think it's the most important thing when you're talking to another person to remember that it's a person you're talking to.
I saw something happen. People are going to get angry at me about this. But by the way, I think that as much as this is remarkable for people, I don't care about why people are interested in you and I talking to each other. I know it's part of the solution. And it doesn't matter. People can listen to this and think everything that we both just said is completely a waste of the time that they spent watching it. I'm okay with that. I still know that it's part of it because, one, when we were working at two different places, we would have never been allowed to do this.
Yes.
And part of being in those places were to be adversarial with each other. And you were much better at that than I was, by the way. But
I'm truly an asshole deep down.
It's not that deep. But what I'm saying is I know that we're not supposed to be doing this, and we're some of the only ones who do.
Yes.
And I appreciate you and respect you for that. I'm hanging out at a place that I love to go to during the summertime. And there are MAGA hats all over the place. A guy in the MAGA hat is a little drunk, a little out of it, and gets into it with somebody who does not have a MAGA hat on. And eventually, the guy without the MAGA hat on smacks the MAGA hat off the guy's head. The guy gets angry, punches the guy who smacked it off his head. Cops come, arrest the MAGA hat guy because he punched the other guy in the face, and there are all these other people there. And I was going to talk about it on the show and didn't, because I realized that what I was going to say was not embracing of the law, but to me felt like what would have been right in the situation. And I have never really figured this out. I could read 100, I could give you 100 different arguments of what's right and what's wrong. But how I feel is when the guy smacked the hat off the head of the other guy, it seemed to me that it was not more wrong than the guy punching him. You know, it didn't seem like he had high ground. You smacked the hat off the guy's head. Before that, it had been this. And there was plenty of ugliness going back and forth. He then smacks the hat off. The guy punches him. He didn't hit him with a 2x4, but he punched him. He opened him up. He was bleeding. And everyone I would talk to about it would say, well, come on, Chris. I mean, you can't do that. Why? Because it's the law. Okay, why is it the law? Because we want to enforce civilization. But we're not that civilized.
I get it.
We give ourselves too much credit for civility, especially in America. Everything we embrace is violent and aggressive. Why does everybody like The Rock? Because he's a great actor? No, it's that symbology of what he represents as a male. And I know that it's wrong, but I feel like you can't be punching everybody in the face that you disagree with. I know, of course. But it's now like we empower people to be their absolute worst all the time, and they gain advantage of it. People say things. They're not just criticizing you. They don't just criticize
me. Oh, I know.
They say horrible things about people, their families, whatever it is. And I don't know how that's making us any better. Is that just what we have to tolerate to be in a democracy? Or have we fucked it up?
It's pretty clear. I mean, I know exactly what you're saying, and I agree with you. And I think that none of that is an excuse for the people in power to shut down criticism of themselves, as has happened in Europe and Australia. Hope it doesn't happen here. On the other hand, I do think, you know, if you don't think of other people as human, you can, there's no limit to what you can do to them. And I do think that's like the key thing to remember is these are people, they have identical value in the eyes of God that you do. And you should always remember that, no matter how pissed you are at them. And no, you can't kill them.
No. Of course. But I'm saying that, I don't know, man. I just feel like we're getting less civilized, even though the law is expanding.
Can I say one last thing?
Go ahead.
Thank the internet for that. I am thrilled that you're enjoying yourself outside of the confines of the business we were both in. And even if I disagree with you on certain things, I just think it's inspirational to see a free man. So
I appreciate you. I like coming down to see you. And I think that the point is as simple as that, Tucker. We're not going to agree on everything, okay? But
I know you do, because there's not one Sicilian man in America who doesn't love Trump. There's not one. And I don't believe you're that man. They're saying, I've done a survey of every Sicilian man in America, and every Sicilian man in America in his heart is like,
well, go finally, Trump. Then I'm special.
I don't believe you.
Because I am Sicilian, and I definitely don't love Trump.
Secretly love. I know that you do. And
he
I know
can
that
speak
I,
for himself.
If I know if I could just x-ray me. Your Sicilian soul, you'd be like, you go, Big Orange!
Big Orange! What I'm saying is this. I believe that, look, you're going to have people say, why are you talking to that guy? I'm going to have people say, why are you talking to that guy? And I love answering the question, because conversation is the cure. You don't have to agree, but you got to listen, and you have to feel each other out, and you got to take it in. And I'm happy to do it with you, and I look forward to doing it again.
Amen. Thank you. Good to see you, man. So it turns out that YouTube is suppressing this show. On one level, that's not surprising. That's what they do. But on another level, it's shocking. With everything that's going on in the world right now, all the change taking place in our economy and our politics, with the wars we're on the cusp of fighting right now, Google has decided you should have less information rather than more. And that is totally wrong. It's immoral. What can you do about it? Well, we could whine about it. That's a waste of time. We're not in charge of Google. Or we could find a way around it, a way that you could actually get information that is true, not intentionally deceptive. The way to do that on YouTube, we think, is to subscribe to our channel. Subscribe. Hit the little bell icon to be notified when we upload and share this video. That way, you'll have a much higher chance of hearing actual news and information. So we hope that you'll do that.